Or to the cloud, and then let me fix the
Are we good to go?
Yes, sorry.
Oh, hello, friends. Welcome to this eighth webinar on the Light of the Soul, which you're probably getting the sense by now that it describes our personality condition from an esoteric point of view and methodically articulates the steps that we have to take to dismantle our personality orientation in order to make soul contact. So we started our last session by taking a look at the very last comment on Sutra 8, which states, as we see in the left-hand column, incorrect knowledge is based upon perception of the form and not upon the state of being. So AAB's final comment on this sutra gives us the ultimate example of someone who has completely transcended incorrect knowledge. Christ knew what was in man and therefore could be a savior. Christ knew because he personified the second aspect of divinity, operating through the consciousness of the Buddhic plane. He automatically bypassed the dense shell of the human personality to achieve sympathetic resonance with the hidden spark in every person. By tuning into the resonant frequency of a person's soul, he knew the state of being radiating from within and could apply the magnetic stimulation needed to expand that soul influence over the personality. That's true service. Healing the outer form is the kind of service we all remember from, Bible stories, but when you can stimulate the influence of the soul, that's a much greater feat. We then moved on to Sutra 9, which states, fancy rests upon images which have no real existence. So, quote unquote, fancy, called vikalpa in Sanskrit, is the act of combining fragments of memory into temporary forms that lack any actual reality. These mental constructs are generated by the personality's fears, desires, and for aspirants, aspirations, because they are drawn entirely from the debris of past experience. They have no real anchor on the higher planes and are thus essentially psychological hallucinations that obscure the truth of the present moment. We then learn that these fancied images fall primarily into three groups, the first being those thought forms which he constructs himself, which have an evanescent life, and which are dependent upon the quality of his desires. The mind begins by constructing a neutral geometric boundary with good or evil qualities of kama manas only projected into this neutral form by the creator after the thought form has been built. The second group of generated thought forms are, quote, those thought forms which are created by the race, the nation, the group, or the organization. It's these group thought forms that, quote, form the sum total of the great illusion. The third and final group is, quote, that thought form created by a man since his first appearance in physical form and called the dweller on the threshold. The dweller is actually the sum total of all physical, astral, and lower mental matter utilized and discarded since the monad's very first descent into Lemurian or whatever form. Thus, it is composed of the unredeemed, crystallized karma and lower vibratory tendencies of tens of thousands of incarnations. Every unresolved desire, fear, and selfish ambition generated over millions of years has been structurally layered into this single, highly integrated composite elemental, which contains no inherent spiritual intelligence and no connection to the spiritual triad. It is called the dweller on the threshold because it stands at the demarcation line between the higher and lower mental planes, hence the dweller. And that pretty much takes us up to where we left off last time. So I want to encourage you anytime to any questions that you might have or comments, just raise your hand, we'll call on you. Okay, so we'll start today's session with the final commentary on Sutra 9, Fancy Rest Upon the Images Which Have No Real Existence. Can we get a reader, please?
Yes, I'll start off. When the man begins to function as the soul, his image he has created through his fancy or his reaction to delusion is dissipated by a supreme exertion. It has no real existence once there is nothing in the aspirant to feed it, and the realization of this enables him to free himself from its thraldom. This is one of the sutras which, though apparently short and simple, is of the most profound significance. It is studied by high initiates who are learning the nature of the creative process of the planet and who are concerned with the dissipation of planetary Maya.
Thank you, BL. So first, when the man begins to function as the soul, this image he has created through his fancy or his reaction to delusion is dissipated by a supreme exertion. It has no real existence once there is nothing in the aspirant to feed it. And the realization of this enables him to free himself from its thraldom. So the destruction of the dweller can't occur on the level on which the dweller functions. You cannot fight an astral mental construct using astral mental weapons. For a disciple to function as the soul requires that he or she successfully transfers their center of gravity out of the lower personality and anchor it within the causal body. From this vantage point, the disciple is no longer identified with the lower she's and thus can observe the dweller objectively. Because the dweller is the synthetic elemental of the three lower worlds, its structural integrity relies on the disciple continuously supplying it with kama manasic energy and physical vitality. But by holding one's polarization steady in the soul, the disciple stands outside the dweller's vibrational field and is thus able to starve the dweller of the sustaining supply of kamic, as in kama, kamic energy. Without the astral source of sustenance, the magnetic cohesion of the dweller's form begins to weaken, for the illusion only holds power for as long as the perceiver grants it its objective reality. The supreme exertion is a concentrated downward projection of solar fire into the weakened elemental structure of the dweller, which, when all the necessary preliminary work has been done, shatters the structure. AAB emphasizes that the ultimate weapon against the thraldom of the dweller is simply realization by the higher mind that this ancient form actually has no real existence, that it is a shadow devoid of triadal life. It is this, and only this, profound soul-centered realization that can break the spell. Of course, you know, there are intermediate stages. This, you know, being totally soul infused means that one has already done a lot of work with the dweller on the way to the third initiation. You know, for instance, we break down much of the power of the dweller on the threshold at the second initiation, when we overcome glamour, when we diffuse the potency of the astral plane, right? But that final breaking through the structure of the dweller doesn't actually happen until the third initiation. But someone who is working, you know, like so many people between the first and second initiation, their dweller has much less control, though not yet eradicated, than for, you know, what's called average humanity, which basically lives themselves the life of the dweller. Okay, finally we have a comment. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to say, Maria Christina says, with Saturn retrograde, these days are a great time to address the release of some of the baggage, the glamours that the dweller carries.
Thank you, Maria Christina. Okay. Finally, we have a comment on the importance of the Ninth Sutra. This is one of the sutras which, though apparently short and simple, is of the most profound significance. It is studied by high initiates who are learning the nature of the creative process of the planet and who are concerned with the dissipation of planetary Maya. So, you know, they're not approaching this. The group she's talking about here is not approaching this sutra from the same perspective that we are, you know, since the sutra itself, fancy rests upon images which have no real existence, is really quite simple and straightforward. To me, this statement suggests the existence of a body of knowledge, maybe commentaries on this sutra that further detail the nature and geometry of kama manas, here called fancy, so that it can be recognized in all its many forms. Okay, any thoughts or questions? All right. Yeah, bring up any chats that may arise. Yeah. Okay. Okay, next up, can we get a reader? We're on sutra number 10 now.
Ben, can you read that for us, please?
Passivity, sleep, is based upon the quiescent state of the vrittis, upon the non-perception of the senses. Some explanation as to the nature of the vrittis is perhaps necessary here. The vrittis are those activities of the mind which eventuate in the conscious relation between the sense employed and that which is sensed. Apart from a certain modification of the mental process or an assertion of the I am I realization, the senses might be active, yet the man be unaware of them. The man is aware that he sees, tastes, or hears. He says, I see, I taste, I hear. And it is the activity of the vrittis, or those mental perceptions, which have relation to the five senses, which enables him to recognize the fact.
Thank you, Ben. All right, so first the sutra itself. Passivity, sleep, is based upon the quiescent state of the vrittis, or upon the non-perception of the senses. The vrittis are the active wave forms of the lower mental substance, citta. It's not citta itself, that's the mental substance. It's the active wave forms that emanate from these, from this mental substance, including its all its modifications and fluctuations. So that's the meaning of vrittis. These fluctuations bombard the etheric brain, keeping the physical vehicle conscious and outwardly oriented. Sleep is induced when the thread of consciousness is withdrawn from the physical brain, causing the inner observer to stop registering the impacts of the five external senses, while the etheric body remains active in order to bathe the physical vehicle in prana. As a result, the physical brain ceases to record the vrittis that dominate during the waking hours. If the consciousness thread is fully withdrawn, the physical brain registers only passivity and silence. However, if the withdrawal is partial or upon the thread's reentry when waking, the brain captures the inner impressions generated by the mind and emotions, translating them into the physical memory we experience as dreaming. Very occasionally, at least in my experience, these impressions seem to come from higher sources. I'm sure many of you have had dreams that seem much more like revelations than simply dreams. So that's just to get us going on a general sense of the nature of passivity, sleep. Now into A.B.'s commentary, quote, some explanation as to the nature of the vrittis is perhaps necessary here. The vrittis are those activities of the mind which eventuate in the conscious relation between the sense employed and that which is sensed. So, vrittis, as I said before, are the active translating waveforms of the mental body. In their lowest outward function, they translate the physical vibrations that come to us through the senses into conscious recognitions. However, they also include all internal thoughts, memories, and desires. Through Raja Yoga, the disciple learns to shut down the outward turned sensory circuit and silence all internal thought generation, thus compelling the citta to cease its chaotic modification and become a perfectly still reflector to the soul, to cease its generation of vrittis. Next. Apart from a certain modification of the mental process or an assertion of the I am I realization, the senses might be active, yet the man beware unaware of them. The man is aware that he sees, tastes, or hears. He says, I see, I taste, I hear. And it is the activity of the vrittis, or those mental perceptions which have relation to the five senses, which enables him to recognize the fact. Okay, so physical perception is a three-part circuit. The sense organs function as passive receptors of environmental vibration. The vrittis act as the active translating waveforms for the lower mind. The I am I principle is the central observer that claims ownership of this translated data. Without the vritti to bridge the gap, the senses would just record blindly, and the central identity would remain isolated from the physical plane. A baby can look out a window into a garden, but because the I am I is just beginning to develop, the baby's mind doesn't register what it sees as trees, grass, and flowers. Any thoughts or questions? Okay.
We have a couple of comments from Marianne. She says, Maitreya and Sai Baba, the cosmic Christ, appear to people most often in dreams, not in our ordinary world, and that at night different ashrams provide tutelage to their disciples.
Right. The latter point is something taught by DK, that, you know, night school is the shorthand for that, you know, that in those deepest phases of sleep, we are taught, we gain tutelage, which is really extraordinary. And these higher beings, such as Maitreya, Sai Baba, and I think many others, find it because of the quiescent state of consciousness, find it much easier to make contact during sleep. Okay. All right, so first up, we need a reader for this, please.
Okay, Marianne, can you read that for us, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
By withdrawing himself from active sense perception, by no longer utilizing the outward going consciousness, and by abstracting that consciousness from the periphery to the center, he can bring on a condition of passivity, a lack of awareness, which is not the samdhi of the yogi, nor the achievement of one-pointedness, such as the student of yoga aspires to, but which is a form of trance. This self-imposed quieting is not only a detriment to the achievement of the highest yoga, but is excessively dangerous in many cases. Students will do well to remember that right activity of the mind and its correct use is the goal of yoga, and that the state called a blank mind and a condition of passive receptivity with the sense relations cut off or atrophied is not part of the process. The sleep here referred is not the passing of the body into the state of slumber, but the putting to sleep of the vrittis. It is the negation of the contact of the senses without the sixth sense, the mind, superseding their activities. In this condition of sleep, a man is open to hallucination, to delusion, to wrong impressions, and to obsessions.
Thank you, Ariane. Okay, so by the way, in the next passage, she will give a corrective to this condition. But for now, first, by withdrawing himself from active sense perception, by no longer utilizing the outward going consciousness, and by abstracting that consciousness from the periphery to the center, he can bring on a condition of passivity, a lack of awareness, which is not the same not it's not the samadhi of the yogi, nor the achievement of one-pointedness, such as a student of yoga aspires to, but which is a form of trance. This self-imposed quieting is not only a detriment to the achievement of the highest yoga, but is excessively dangerous in many cases. So she's giving a another concept of quote unquote sleep here, of passivity that is not useful. The withdrawal of the senses is a legitimate preliminary step of yoga, not the goal. If this withdrawal results in mental passivity and negative trance, the practitioner has simply evacuated their instrument, leaving it exposed to lower astral invasion. True yoga requires that the withdrawn energy be subjected to one-pointed mental tension, thus keeping the central identity awake and polarized in the higher mind. Next, students will do well to remember that right activity of the mind and its correct use is the goal of yoga, and that the state called, quote, a blank mind, unquote, and a condition of passive receptivity with the sense relations cut off or atrophied is not part of the process. A blank mind is an energetic vacuum. The intellect is powered down, leaving the mental body devoid of tension, which invites invasion by astral forces. The true still mind is not passive, but instead holds a positive tension and an inward orientation. Focused by the will of the central observer, the mind becomes perfectly quiet, not through lethargy, but by vibrating at a controlled, stable frequency, thus enabling it to become receptive to soul impression. Next, the sleep here referred to is not the passing of the body into the state of slumber, but the putting to sleep of the vrittis. It is the negation of the contacts of the senses without the sixth sense, the mind, superseding their activities. In this condition of sleep, a man is open to hallucination, to delusion, to wrong impressions, and to obsessions. So the sleep of the vrittis, without the active superseding control of the lower mind, creates an unpiloted, unshielded vehicle. Without the active tension of this mental principle to filter and govern, the practitioner is subject to the uncontrolled activity of the astral plane, resulting in delusion, hallucination, and even obsession, because you're inviting in these astral forces, right?
Francis,
Yeah.
sorry to interrupt.
No, don't be.
And Veronica, nobody can hear you. Your mic looks closed to me.
Testing
I
one,
show.
two.
Can you hear me, Francis?
I can hear you fine.
There we go. And Veronica, I see your mic open. All right. Gina, can you now say something so that Gina, can you now hear her?
Speak, Vina.
Gina, can you hear Aunt Veronica? Aunt Veronica, you have to say something so they can hear you.
Toranes, toranes,
Okay.
ακούμε, Veronica. Tú sí la mínima ότι δεν
Και εγώ
ακούγεσαι,
σας
αλλά δεν το
ακούω.
πήρες.
Αν δεν σας ακούτε
Όλα
εγώ τώρα.
καλά, όλα καλά. Όλα
Okay.
καλά. Ευχαριστούμε.
Okay, are you guys all right now?
Your mic is closed again, Anne Ronta. Okay, I'm sorry. I hope we Okay, we got a hand. So we got a couple of hands.
Go ahead, Stacia.
Stacia, go ahead.
You have to unmute yourself.
Okay, do so come. Dora.
Okay, I'll try. There's somebody talking. Well, there's a number of things. Unfortunately, I'm preparing for a TS business meeting, and I'm going to re-listen. This is such an incredible thing that you're doing and what you're putting together here.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. There's so much I'd like to say. Just from what I caught in between mopping, was about at the beginning you talked about dismantling the astral plane. Then you talked about
good luck on that one.
Well, that's
no, point. I'm kidding. It's actually the
yeah.
influence of the astral sheath. Yeah, but go ahead.
There's a lot I'd like to expound on here, but there's a few things just to contemplate that I have questions. And you talked about the one-pointed central focus on tension, and then you elaborated, I believe, that on the positive tension, so the true still mind.
Right.
So, first of all, any quick tips on dismantling the astral, holding positive tension and inward orientation? Because I have personally experienced an unpiloted vehicle. And I know the danger in that.
Yeah, it's not the way to go. You know, no. I mean, when you think, oh, you know, just emptiness, make the mind, you know, still, you can mistake that for meaning blank and, you know, just vacating. And that's, nothing will happen. I mean, If you're lucky, nothing will happen. But
yeah.
It absolutely will not take you in a positive direction, because it lacks the mental focus necessary to make soul contact. You have to have a positive point of tension oriented towards the soul, and the key, you asked for tips, the
yes.
key is to continuously come back to that steady focus that is maintained through that point of tension. And you know, you have to do it continuously for some time just to still the vrittis, you know, because that is a, you know, you might gather from what we've been reading that, you know, it's not a good thing to still the vrittis, but it's only not a good thing to still the vrittis if you don't create this point of tension. But once, what you do is you shift the focus from the link that connects the senses to the central observer. You shift your focus from that link, which is the vrittis, to the observer itself, right? To mm-hmm. that central jiva. And then you focus one-pointedly on soul reception. However you imagine that to be, right? In other words, you seek the highest vibration within yourself, in order to focus. And this initially is, you know, a continuously shifting paradigm, because as you grow in soul contact, so does the sense of that connection, that signal, that beacon that's coming from the soul. So it actually gets easier in a sense in that way. But overcoming the vrittis is, you know, it's a huge thing. You know, this is, you know, it's stated like, oh, just do the A, B, and C and you're cool.
Right.
You know? But it's a life work, you know, just to calm the mind, which is technically means still the vrittis, or that, you know, that activity that is generated through sense, the senses.
Yes, but I hear you saying instilling the. I'm just going to be put myself in a vulnerable position and share for the sake of all. And I study, and my father told me I had spiritual gluttony. And when I went from TS to Alice Bailey to TSG with Torkham Sarah-Darian's teachings and then into Alice Bailey teachings, I wasn't prepared to be going in the places that I was led. And their danger, truly, that is not a good place to be. When you, I like how you simply put it, an unpiloted vehicle, which is merely another term for possession, in my opinion, if there were such a thing. But it's just if something takes over, and it's not useful. I have been studying going back into the Raja Yoga, and in timey science of yoga has helped, is helping. I mean, I've got a hair more consciousness than I did last year or the year before. I mean, and I'm happy with just as long as there's some progress being made, and hence I'm so appreciative of what you're doing here. I really want to join you all the time, but it's so many hats to wear. So thank you all. I will quit babbling and I will just be listening now. Thank you.
Okay, the
Yeah.
Master DK warns against meditating too much. He says, 30 minutes at a time
Yeah.
is sufficient. And also he strongly recommends a balance of study and service,
Yes.
to meditation. But the teachings given in this book can really inform your meditation process.
I'm sorry, which book are we in? That's how busy I've been. Which one?
The Light of the Soul.
Oh, Light of the Soul. Well, Yoga Sutras. Okay, well, there you have it. All
There you
right.
have it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? I see a bunch of chats here, but.
Yeah, we do have a couple of chats. Let me see. Maria Christina says, holding the inner tension as the observer is a helpful technique.
Yes, let me digest that. Yes, the observer is that point of tension that is held steady in the light, in waking consciousness, not in meditation. It acts as a corrective. It makes you aware of what's going on in your outer life. In meditation, it becomes what we've been talking about, which is the still but focused indweller that is oriented towards soul receptivity. Anyone else? Okay. I see Ben says, continue.
Rhonda says, you
Go ahead.
must exchange the thought, a higher thought.
Let me find it. Oh, yeah. You must exchange the thought. Yeah,
Higher thought.
I would say it's not so much thought as, yes, it's always important to have, to upgrade your thought forms because they're literally made of higher substance and will increase the vibratory quality of your. But it's the vibratory quality of your vrittis, what you really want to do is exchange thought for stillness in the light, of that held point of tension that's directed towards the soul, and not generate thought forms at all, but not go into a blank state. You can The high yogi can maintain absolute focus without generating thought forms, but that's a goal rather than just something that we can instantly do, right? Okay, is that it?
No, several others. Ariane says, I meditate often with others, volunteers from Share International Worldwide, offered both in person and via Zoom. When we keep our focus on the Ajna Center, transmission meditation is overseen by the Master of the Wisdom, who maintain the individual's safety and conduct, and conduct the higher energies generated, the new group of world servers, potentizing their work. You can learn more at shareinternational.org. This is free, open to anyone mentally well over the age of 12, non-denominational, and a major act of service.
Thank you, Ariane.
And then Ben says, continual consent to the present and action with God will lead to limpid emptiness and usefulness.
Hang on a minute. Okay. Yes, I like that, Ben. Continual consent to the presence. You can have this quality of consent to the presence. This is a beautiful phrase. Without generating thought forms. Continual consent to the presence and action of God will lead to limp. I'm not sure what action of God, what that means. Vibration, I'm not sure, will lead to limpid emptiness. Limpid meaning that the busyness has, that you transcended the busyness, and the emptiness is a very awake and alive form of emptiness, usefulness. Thank you, Ben. Okay. All right.
And just a couple more. Ariane says the eternal now.
Yes. The eternal now is another way of describing. Oh, geez. You have your own comprehension of the eternal now as you are able to quiet the mind and stay focused on the light, right? That is not the the macrocosmic eternal now, but it is the, it's moving towards that reality, you know, from the uninitiated microcosmic perspective. You know, there's, you know, the fourth initiation, you enter into a realm of the eternal now, unavailable while you still have a causal body, right? And then of course that is an ever unfolding reality at each of the systemic planes. You know, the Atmic eternal now is revelatory compared to the Buddhic eternal now, etc. But in the direction of is gained by staying focused on the light and oriented towards the soul. Anyone else?
Maria Christina says, the Arcane School provides a wonderful curriculum for meditation.
Yeah, it's the original school, founded by Alice Bailey, back when she was writing, even in her earlier books. That is one of the schools, one of the few schools that teach the works of Alice Bailey. Okay? All right.
And that's all I see for right now.
Okay. Can we get a reader, please?
Oh, yes. Nadel, can you read that for us, please?
Sleep is of several kinds, and only a short tabulation is possible in such a commentary as this is. One, the ordinary sleep of the physical body, where the brain does not respond to any sense contacts. Two, sleep of the vrittis, or of those modifications of the mental processes which correlate the man with his environment. through the medium, through the medium of the senses of and the mind. 3, the sleep of the soul, which, occultly speaking, covers that part of human experience which dates from a man's first human incarnation until he, quote, awakens, close quote, to a knowledge of the plan and endeavors to bring the lower man into line with the nature and will of the inner spiritual man. 4, the sleep of the ordinary medium, wherein the etheric body is partially extruded from the physical body and is likewise separated from the astral body, bringing in a condition of very real danger.
Okay, so this is just, as you can see on the page to your right, this is just 4 of the 6 that you'll be giving. Okay, so first off, sleep is of several kinds, and only a short tabulation is possible in such a commentary as this. 1, the ordinary sleep of the physical body, where the brain does not respond to any sense contacts. So by withdrawing the thread of consciousness and shutting off the sensory intake valves, the physical body is left to the oversight of the physical elemental. This allows the etheric body to freely draw in fresh systemic prana and repair cellular damage within the interference of the lower mind. Without the interference of the lower mind. It could do its work without the interference of the lower mind. Okay, 2, sleep of the vrittis, or those modifications of the mental processes which correlate the man with his environment through the medium of the senses and the mind. So it's the go-between. Vrittis are the go-between between the senses or outer sensation and the processor of that information. They are those wave forms generated by mind stuff. So through the sleep of the vrittis, one's mental substance is forced to cease its outward oriented activity. The constantly morphing sensory waveforms are flattened, and the mind ceases to be a reactive mirror to the dense physical world. 3, of course, you know, as we've just read, there's this could be good. You can put to sleep the vrittis, but if you inculcate a blank mind, that it is not a yogic process, not a positive yogic process. Only when the mind is held as a point of tension, oriented towards the soul, you know, standing in the light, as they call it, does the sleep of the vrittis benefit the meditative process? Okay, 3, the sleep of the soul, which occultly speaking covers that part of a human experience, which dates from a man's first human incarnation until he awakens to a knowledge of the plan and endeavors to bring the lower man into line with the nature and will of the inner spiritual man. This sleep refers to the soul's relationship with the lower quaternary. Upon individualization, the soul projects a tiny fraction, a spark, sometimes called a seed, of its energy into dense matter to anchor a human personality. For millions of years, the ego on its own plane pays almost no attention to its lower projection because that projection is too dense and its vibration too low to register any egoic transmission. Thus, the soul remains abstracted, leaving the lower vehicles to operate automatically. During this long cycle of egoic sleep, ego meaning soul, the human vehicle is controlled by the lunar lords, thereby allowing the physical astral and lower mental bodies to very gradually evolve through the friction of life in the three worlds. Because the soul is asleep to the lower form, its solar fire remains latent, a hidden spark rather than a conscious directed beam. During this long period, the personality is an active, self-contained unit, but remains spiritually unconscious. Any thoughts or questions? So she really expands on the idea of what sleep can mean. And finally, four, the sleep of the ordinary medium. Really turned the corner with this one, wherein the etheric body is partially extruded from the physical body and is likewise separated from the astral body, bringing in a condition of real danger. So in ordinary sleep, the etheric body remains completely interlocked with the physical body, keeping it biologically alive and protected and bathing it in prana. In a mediumistic trance, the etheric web is physically forced partially out of the biological vehicle. Since the etheric body is the source of bodily heat and vitality, this extrusion causes a dangerous drop in physical temperature, a slowing of the heart rate, and a state of almost death-like catalepsy. By forcing the etheric body out of alignment with both the physical and the astral sheaths, the medium severs all connection with their central identity and thus has no memory or control of what the physical body does during the trance. Also, repeated forcible extrusion of the etheric body results in an ever-increasing difficulty in realignment. Each time the etheric web is torn loose from its normal interpenetration, rather than withdrawn consciously and gradually, the seams between the vehicles loosen further, until eventually the etheric physical link can fail to snap back, creating a partial disconnect, resulting in chronic devitalization. And this is a common problem for this type of lower medium. Thoughts or questions? Okay, on to number five. And six, could we get a reader for these last 2 points? Of
yes.
Tenth
Scott,
go ahead.
Can you read that for us, please?
Here we go. Five, samadhi, or the sleep of the yogi, the result of the conscious scientific withdrawal of the real man from his lower threefold sheath in order to work on high levels, preparatory to some active service upon a lower. Six, the sleep of the nirmanakayas, which is a condition of such intense spiritual concentration and focusing in the spiritual or atmic body that the outward going consciousness is withdrawn not only from the three planes of human endeavor, but likewise from the two lower expressions of the spiritual triad. For purposes of his peculiar and specific work, Dharmanikaya sleeps to all states save that of the third or atmic plane.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, so first five, samadhi, or the sleep of the yogi. The result of the conscious scientific withdrawal of the real man from his lower threefold sheath in order to work on higher levels, preparatory to some active service upon the lower. To achieve samadhi, the yogi directs the consciousness to withdraw from the peripheral nervous system and the five senses abstracting it into the head center. As a result, the physical body falls into a state of quiescence, yet the connecting threads of life and consciousness remain intact. Thus, the physical vehicle is secured by the positive tension of the yogi's will, protecting it from astral invasion. This is part of that focused orientation towards the soul, this quality of the tension of the yogi's will. As the yogi continues to abstract him or herself, they retract the thread of consciousness upward, withdrawing their active focus out of the astral and lower mental bodies, thereby also rendering those sheaths quiescent. Working with the I am that principle, the yogi identifies with the spiritual triad as it expresses itself through the causal body, shifting their polarization so completely that the dense sheaths temporarily cease to exist in their active awareness. And then finally, number six, the last paragraph and commentary on the 10th Sutra, the sleep of the Nirmanakayas, which is a condition of such intense spiritual concentration and focusing in the spiritual or atmic body, that the outward-going consciousness is withdrawn not only from the three planes of human endeavor, but likewise from the two lower expressions of the spiritual triad. For purposes of his peculiar and specific work, the Nirmanakaya, quote-unquote, sleeps to all states save that of the third or atmic plane. Okay, so a Nirmanakaya, also called a divine contemplative, is a master of wisdom who has achieved full liberation, but chooses to remain within the planetary aura in order to serve the hierarchy. They no longer possess physical, astral, or lower mental vehicles. In fact, their lowest vehicle of expression is the spiritual triad itself. Therefore, their sleep has nothing to do with biology or the lower senses. It is instead a restriction of triadal force. You know, I mean, we're hoping that someday we'll get in touch with triadal force, right? And they're restricting triadal force in the same way that we try to restrict astral and lower mental vrittis, right? So in the previous category, samadhi, the yogi abstracted consciousness from the three lower worlds to work within the spiritual triad. The Nirmanakaya takes this abstraction two planes higher by upwardly shifting their focus out of the higher mental and Buddhic planes onto the Atmic plane, the realm of spiritual will, in order to serve as an energetic bridge between Shambhala, which works on the monadic and logoic planes, and the hierarchy, which is centered on the Buddhic plane. Okay.
We have a couple of comments.
Yeah.
Ariane says, this was a little earlier comment that you had. This is why alcohol and drug abuse is so dangerous, as it can rend the etheric form, opening up a gate to negative possessing entities.
That's absolutely true.
And then William says, where is mankind generally in the scale of ego union? 1 equals none and 10 equals total.
Well, there are many levels of consciousness extant in the world today. The lower realm can be described, you know, as those who have unintegrated lower sheaths, that their physical, etheric, astral, and mental sheaths are unintegrated, though DK tells us that the physical etheric was integrated during the Lemurian times, and so that almost everyone, maybe even everyone, has that particular cleavage has been healed, and they present a united physical etheric sheath, right? But there are many, though still in among the lower groups in incarnation, who are working to heal the cleavage between their physical etheric and their emotional sheath. Then there's a very, very large segment of the population that is working to heal the cleavage between their emotional and mental sheaths. These are called astrally polarized. And DK says over half, I think something like two-thirds of the population is astrally polarized, meaning they have yet to heal that final sheath. Then you have a sizable minority who has an integrated personality, has healed the cleavages between all three of the lower sheaths, and are in the last stages of integrating their personality and developing a personality ray, which is what's necessary in order to interface with the soul and with the soul ray. And then there's always a diminishing percentage, I can't give you real percentages, of those who have a very active interaction between the personality and soul ray, and are disciples, are in process of preparing for either the first or second initiations. A tiny, tiny group is preparing for the
Oh, Francis, echo.
There, I'm back.
Okay.
Yeah, all I have to do is unplug and plug my microphone back in. So, okay, that last group was those preparing for the second and third initiations, a teeny, teeny group, are orienting themselves to the spiritual triad, or under the influence of the spiritual triad, right? And a negligible few have broken the chains of samsara. They're not negligible. It's just in numbers they're negligible, right? They're extremely important. So that's where you have the fourth and fifth initiates who have sacrificed and themselves in order to reincarnate and guide humanity from within, as incarnated masters and adepts. But most of the new group of world servers, which interface the hierarchy, are first and second initiates, with some guiding third initiates that help connect hierarchy to humanity. So that's the long answer. I don't know how to give you the short answer. Okay, anybody else?
Well, William asked how asleep is ego and personality in the current evolution, but I think you covered that in your initial reply to him. So,
yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'd say, you know, the medium is emotional polarity with a significant group that has achieved an integrated personality, which means that they're beginning to be mentally oriented.
And then Stacia has her hand.
Go ahead.
Yes, my goodness. There are people going to be here by 1:45, but I am so enthralled with this. I just was hoping to make a comment of a couple of things.
Go ahead.
Someone had mentioned Sharon International.
Awareness.
that Gita in Sarodarian with Torkum Sarodarian's teachings on scientific meditation has literally saved my life personally. So there are a number of options. We just have to discern which one is more appropriate. And I highly encourage that for first timers who might be experiencing, as my father told me, spiritual gluttony, because it gives firm direction and it's influenced by Theosophy, Agni Yoga, and Alice Bailey, the Dwellkul's teachings. It's a synthesis of those three.
Right.
And it has been the soundest approach to ascending in consciousness, in my opinion. And then one other thing, because you were talking about something that made me think of personality and soul and maybe that bridge, but what has come to me in recently is I used to Argentine tango, and there's a saying in it that one plus one is one. So where I just now look at it as dancing with my soul, and the soul is my tanguero, or my solar angel is my tanguero, the one who leads. He is the leader.
Got it.
Yeah. And what is you when learning that dance, all right, that you have to learn how to lead and both follow. That means I had to take my husband and do ochos with him, which are intricate, delicate, very feminine dance. But in the dance, it's all about communication. And when the lead, which is usually the male, the true lead, is what presents. He leads the lady or the personality, depending on how good of a dancer she is. And there's not just forced movement. Within the dance, it's in the moment. And it's a communication. And there's invitations to take a certain step. And then the one who follows can right. either choose to take that step or not.
Right.
Anyway, if you get it, what I'm going at here, it's a beautiful dance. The whole thing is all I'm going
yeah,
to.
Yeah, it can be. It can become a practice.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're at a level to experience it that way, it can be extraordinary. Yeah. Thank you, Stacia. Anyone else?
Okay. I think that's all I see right now. Yeah.
Oh, there's Heliosol. Go ahead, Heliosol. Which is Irene.
Yes, thank you. It's just really quick to support what Stacy just said. One and one is one in Egyptian spiritual science. It's written and it's explored and written in the Shlomo Lubavitch books on Egypt, and he was there many years and wrote monumental work about that. So
Temple of Man.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, one plus one is one. Thank you.
Yeah. Oneness can't be added, right? It's you know, I would have done so much better in school if the philosophy of number had been taught instead of just the numbers as counters, you know. And a prime example of that is a oneness added to oneness is an oxymoron. If you're in oneness, any addition is results in oneness, and it has more to do with awareness than any kind of additive principle. So, okay, are we done with the chats? Do you have anything else? All right, let's
yes.
go. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. Ariane says, per Benjamin Krame, in 1984, when there were six bean people, there were about 850,000 first degree initiates, 240,000 second degree initiates, 2,300 to 2,400 third degree initiates, and 450 degree fourth degree initiates, 63 masters working with the human evolution.
Thank you, Ariane. Could we get a reader, please?
Yes, Martha G. Can you read for us, please?
Yes, I can. Memory.
Oops, I thought it was Martha B. Sorry.
Sorry, I think you're right, Martha.
Was it? Did you say B or G?
I said G.
Uh-oh. I'll wait my turn.
Love Martha B.
You will be next.
Memory is the holding on to that which has been known. This memory concerns several groups of realizations, either active or latent. It deals with certain congeries of known factors, and these might be enumerated as follows. One, the thought images of that which is tangible, objective, and which has been known by the thinker upon the physical plane. Two, kama manasik for desire or lower mind, images of past desires and their gratification. The picture-making faculty of the average man is based upon his desires, high or low desires, aspirational or degrading, in its sense of pulling apart, pulling down, and their known gratification. This remains equally true of the memory of a gluttonous man, for instance, in his latent image of a satisfactory dinner, and the memory of the Orthodox saint based upon his picture making of a joyous heaven.
Thank you, Martha.
Could I make a
yes
observation? In reference to this statement, for some reason I was thinking about the cultural ramifications of eating and dinner and the next step that it often led to was relationship and family. And I'm somehow learned, was taking in this morning, that as the patterns in group eating expand, such as what the Sufis do in terms of feeding thousands of people, the culture shifts into what that was all about, which is leaving survivor mentality into relationship. So when I hear these sutras being talked about, I hear an attempt not to go to what we know is from this teacher or that teacher or this teacher, or and to recognize all of us are struggling to release often what is our strength. A wise person spoke earlier about gluttony, mental gluttony, or I would offer that my weakness was excessive advocacy to a teacher. In this case, it was Jesus. And that the wisdom that we're coming to is really in these and stated in the sutras. I share the group's enthusiasm for this course, because coming back to the after, you know, thinking I had understood the sutras and realizing how little I really understand in terms of where we're going in group, that the courage in releasing what we thought we knew and what we thought we remembered. You know, there's a profound desire attached to our memory. And to, you know, what is it, DK says, let memory expand and recollection dim. I think that's what this meaning of this sutra is about, perhaps. Thank you. Sorry.
Let there be no recollection, and yet let memory rule, or something. Yeah, let memory something.
Yeah, let memory rule, I think, and recollection dim.
Let there be no recollection is the first part, and yet let memory rule. So giving this dichotomy of what we usually think of as being the same thing, you know. Yeah. Thank you, Martha. Rich commentary. Appreciate it. Okay, so first, the sutra itself. 11, memory is the holding on to that which has been known. Very simple, as many of these sutras are. Remember that DK himself translated these sutras from their original Sanskrit. That was the initial phase of this book, and then Alice Bailey created the commentary, which then DK went back through and corrected, expanded on. But you know, it's mostly Alice's work in terms of the commentary, completely DK's work in terms of the sutras themselves. Okay, so memory is the holding on to that which has been known. So when we perceive an object, the mental substance, citta, modifies itself into a vritti, a waveform, to geometrically match the vibration of that object, the object of our memory. Once the object is removed from the senses, the vritti does not dissolve, nor does the mind return to an unconditioned state. Instead, the active waveform sinks into latency, leaving a permanent geometric impression called a samskara etched in the mental aura. Memory occurs when the central observer, the IMI, directs their attention back into that latent groove, now existing in the molecular geometry of the mental body. The mind supplies energy to revivify the impression, forcing the mental substance to temporarily recreate the geometric shape of that past vritti. Next. This memory concerns several groups of realizations, either active or latent. It deals with certain congeries of known factors, and these might be enumerated as follows. Number one, the thought image of that which is tangible, objective, and which has been known by the thinker upon the physical plane. This first group of memories is limited to data gathered through the five physical senses. When the thinker interacts with a tangible object, the physical senses receive the vibration of that object. This impact is transmitted through the etheric nervous system to the astral body and is finally registered by the lower mind, which constructs a thought form of vritti that geometrically mirrors the original physical object. These thought images are energetic replicas of the object in mental matter. To be consciously registered as a memory, this mental waveform then makes a vibratory imprint upon the etheric brain, which in turn conditions the cells of the dense physical brain. Okay. Next. Kama manasik, or desire lower mind, images of past desires and their gratification. The picture making faculty of the average man is based upon his desires, high or low desires, aspirational or degrading, in its sense of pulling down, and their known gratification. This remains equally true of the memory of a gluttonous man, for instance, and his latent image of a satisfactory dinner, and the memory of the Orthodox saint based upon his picture making of a joyous heaven. Okay, the lower mind builds the thought form of the object or scenario. The desire nature then provides the magnetic and gravitational energy based on the memory of past pleasure or the craving for future gratification. The resulting memory is a vitalized elemental, that pulls the consciousness of the thinker towards it. This is the basis of average human consciousness, or I should say the content of average human consciousness. Okay. Next up. Can we get a reader?
Yes. Marsha Briscoe.
Can I ask a question before so? Yeah, just briefly, if you wouldn't mind talking about your understanding of overcoming the pull of the elementals and within one's form.
Okay, so, you know, for example, this whole second part is a question of making quiescent the physical, astral, and lower mental elementals, which together form a single elemental rule by Mars, by the way, that is just called the personality elemental. So that's what you're dealing with, right? And how to overcome it is simply to turn one's attention from it. You know, before Alice Paley said, you have to, first of all, you know, this is the dweller on the threshold, basically. This composite elemental is the dweller on the threshold. And that has been built since we were individualized, right? It's made up of all those past vritis, you could say, accumulation. And the first stage is to turn one's attention from it consistently and regularly. First of all, by recognizing that it is not reality, you know, a fancy, as you know, which is kama manas, is not real. So first of all, we take that as a concept, and then that concept starts to permeate our consciousness. We actually recognize, and through our experience, that it's not real, right? And then through meditation and study and service, all three, we actually give substance to the alternative understanding, which is a soul touched, you could say, understanding. And then through holding the mind steady in the light, focus on the soul, and learning to still the mind, which is to shut down the activity of the vrittis, then we shift the scales gradually towards soul orientation. This makes the job a lot easier in terms of recognition of the nature of the dweller of the lower elementals. So that's, you know, there are many, many, many specific ideas connected with the depriving the vrittis of energy, but that's the basis for it. Okay. All right, shall we go on? Okay, next up.
Yeah, there you go, Martha.
Okay. Three, that memory activity, which is the result of mental training, the accumulation of acquired facts, the consequence of reading or of teaching, and which is not purely based upon desire, but which has its basis in intellectual interest. Keep going, this whole phase, okay. Four, all the various contacts which the memory holds and recognizes as emanating from the five lower sense perceptions. Five, those mental images latent in the memory-making faculty, which are the total of the knowledge contacted and the realizations evoked by the right use of the mind as a sixth sense. All these forms of the memory faculty have to be dropped and no longer held. They must be recognized as modifications of the mind, of the thinking principle, and therefore as part of that versatile psychic nature, which has to be dominated before the yogi can hope to attain liberation from limitation and from all lower activity. This is the goal. May I say something about?
Of course.
Something that came through for me on the recollection, memory, those two, and that memory is fine, but the recollection part is the part to lessen. Makes more sense to me now because when we talked about the desire, for example, for something that you've loved to eat in the past, and then here comes some part of you that then wants to recollect that particular food. Ooh, yes, the cookie monster must have that cookie sort of thing.
That's it.
Remember yeah,
that
so
great
as long as
Thanksgiving when we ate.
Yeah. All those memories build up so much of a almost like a desire for recollection. And what I've noticed in dealing with my own issues around food, which I'm sure we all have to some degree, is I can feel the pull. It's sort of like, wouldn't that be good? And if I catch it, and then just take a deep breath and let it go, then the recollection ceases and the whole motive for getting dragged into I have to have that cookie disappears.
Yeah. Yeah, memory is a function of the knower. It's a faculty. Recollection is applying that faculty to a particular set of vrittis that have been imprinted in the etheric mental body and the mental body and the etheric and physical brain, right? That's recollection. So you can see there's a really big difference, between the faculty of memory and recollection, specific actual recollection. So thank you, Martha. Okay, so first off, we just have a couple of minutes, but we can at least get going on this. Three, that memory activity, which is a result of mental training, the accumulation of acquired facts, like what we're doing, the consequence of reading or of teaching, and which is not purely based upon desire, but which has its basis in intellectual interest. So at this level, the yogi or student's mental body is no longer dominated by the astral body's karmic change. As a result, the vritti is no longer being powered by the cravings of the solar plexus. Instead of karmic desire, the cohesive force holding these thought forms together is lower manas. This form of citta is molded into thousands of well-defined informational waveforms, which, unlike the elementals of karmic memory, are organized into structured matrices of data, categorization, and logic. Though it is not the end goal, this mental training is necessary in order to upgrade the mental body from a reactive sensory processor into an organized instrument of transmission. In other words, it moves it from a negative to a positive polarity. You become mentally oriented and eventually a mentally polarized after the second initiation. But it's not in its ultimate phase a road to freedom. It also has to be let go of. And that, I think, is all we're going to have time for today. We'll actually pick up here on this page. And so, yes, Irene.
I also very good question. The intellectual interest at the words, the passage number three on the top of the page, the intellectual interest definition, the term, in this teaching, is it considered the positive mental activity, or it is like fancy?
It depends on your perspective, where you are in the process. If you're an emotionally polarized human being, Or like in our case, intellectually interested, but also spiritually motivated, then it is a positive, because it is helping to train the mind, right? At a certain point, even this has to be released. But a lot of what we're looking to gain in our study is, especially in this book, is the very method of implementing that release, So it's a kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Catch 22, right? Where we're using mental activity to learn how to stop using mental activity, right? But it is a stage on the way. It's okay. Part of the process of becoming.
So it's all in the context, right? In the context,
yes,
of the evolution.
Yes,
let's say.
Totally.
Thank you.
Right, but but even when you take a master of wisdom, they don't work with lower mind anymore. They work with direct intuition. But when they're communicating with disciples, they have to re-enter the mental framework, which they had developed in previous lives, and sort of, start it back up in order to communicate with disciples.
That was very interesting, Tachan. Quickly, why do they need to go back up to what they already done? That's very interesting for me. This is question, this is kind of like, I would like to hear your opinion.
So are you asking, what again? Why do
why disciples need to go back to bring back or review, like what you expression, but I can't reproduce your words, but I'm holding on the essence of it. Sometimes disciples have to recall or reproduce what they have done already. Why does that need to be?
Because the process is spiralic rather than in a direct line, that it, every time it's regained, then further processing is done at that level. And so the entire process moves spirally rather than rotary, where no progress is made, or in a direct line, which only the state of beingness or pure spirit can move in that particular way.
Okay, so that means we can assume that the next spiral is like update, so to speak, technically, because you can't bring the, or maybe you, I don't know, I'm just pure, that's interesting for me, very interesting. So this what you mentioned, like spiral, right? Everything is spiraling, everything, the evolution moves.
But spiral is a very specific term that you revisit. Yes, you revisit, but at a higher point of recognition of and potential understanding. Just think about your own life. How many times, we have to revisit situations, lessons.
I'm just saying, is it like update because they are looking at the same material or the same information from the different point?
It can
like
be
more
both.
Advanced. I would know no
right.
New advanced look at it, and that was probably
even if it's the same information, if you're if you're interfacing with it again, it will be from a more advanced perspective. Maybe just subtly, like a friend and I read A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. We read it completely through over a period of a few years, and we turned around and just reread the entire thing again. And it was literally like we'd never read the book, right?
Agreed, yes.
And the reason for that is perspective. That which is gained had time to gained before by the first reading and by everything else that was going on, was able to create a higher turn on the spiral in terms of perspective.
Right.
And it was like a completely new reading.
Same
now
here.
That I'm teaching that book, that whole thing is now happening again at an even higher level of understanding and perspective. But I think it was very much dependent on those first two readings, you know.
Thank you, Francis.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, we're way over, but that's okay.
Yeah, we are. And I just wanted to read a couple of things that Ariane put in there. She says, the masters of the wisdom returned to the world had to relearn speech as they ordinarily communicate by telepathy only, and that spirals can be compared to accessing higher octaves. And then I also wanted to say that I recall somewhere DK talking about recapitulating what we've learned, you know, on that higher spiral as we move forward with it.
It's part of no one doesn't recapitulate, you know. It really is part of the evolutionary process, at least in this solar system, where spiralic motion rules the way we evolve. Anyone else? Final thoughts?
Lots of thank yous. Let me give the dates. The next thing coming up is Treatise on Cosmic Fire on the 14th of August. And then on the 16th of August will be the Secret Doctrine. And our next Light of the Soul will be 6 September. And all of those are at their regular time of 7 p.m. GMT.
Great. And, you know, Constant Contact is the best way. Sign up for Constant Contact on MoriaFederation.com, and you'll get notices if you're already, I bet everybody here does. But if you don't, that's the way to do it. And then you don't have to memorize the dates. You'll get them in your inbox. So, okay. I'm glad to stay over and take on any final questions. I see a bunch that have appeared.
Yeah, they're mostly thank yous to everybody. So
thank yous and flowers.
Yeah.
I see that.
Thank you as always, Francis.
Yeah. My great pleasure, believe me. This is my life's work. So thank you. And we'll see you next time. Much love to you all. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.